management, or other sponsors. It's time for the Edge Broadcast with your host, Daniel Ott. You can join Daniel and his guest as we discover the truth together. Within the continental U.S., call toll-free 1-800-996-9638 or click on the Fast Blast link on the Edge Broadcast website. That's toll-free 1-800-996-9638 or click on the Fast Blast link on the Edge Broadcast website. You can find out about our guests and topics by logging on to the Edge's website, theedgeam.com. That's theedgeam.com. And now here's your host for the Edge Broadcast. Here's Daniel Ott.
Now let's go to our newsmaker line and see if we have with us David Griffin. David, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to the Edge Broadcast tonight, David.
It's good to be with you, Daniel.
All right. Well, you know what? I'm really glad to have you on this belated 9/11 anniversary, of course. You know, a couple days ago, there was some people that took notice and remembered 9/11. Certainly, you've been keeping that issue out there with the truth, and we're so glad to have you on the program tonight, as we're going to clarify and ask questions, hopefully, that no other host has ever asked, and we'll take questions from our listening audience, too, as well. But, Mr. Griffin, before we get going, as we always do, why don't you tell the folks a little bit about you, and then we'll get into the interview.
Okay. Well, I mean, I used to be an ordinary person, and now I'm a conspiracy theorist. would be the way I'm labeled in the press now. But prior to that, I was a philosophy and theology teacher. I had published about 25 books in the fields of philosophy, like mind-body problem and philosophy of religion, and that included a lot of philosophy of science. One of my major specialties was the relation between religion and science. I belong to the school of thought known as process philosophy and process theology. And in fact, I had I was one of the two co-editors of the of Process and Reality, which was the great work of Alfred North Whitehead, who had in his English incarnation taught at Cambridge, where he was Bertrand Russell's math teacher, and they collaborated on Principia Mathematica, and then he came to Harvard and developed really the most extensive philosophical system of the 20th century. So I was doing that sort of thing until, although I did also work on global issues in relation to religion and politics, worked on global issues, so I did have several years studying those things. But that's what I was doing before 9/11 came, and at first I accepted the liberal reaction, which was that this was blowback for U.S. foreign policy. It was really almost impermissible to say even that, but that's the line I was taking, and so I started writing a book on American imperialism. And I had gotten that about three-fourths finished when somebody sent me some convincing information. I'd seen some before that I didn't find convincing, but finally this was the complete 9/11 timeline that Paul Thompson and his people had put together. Yeah. And I saw that there were literally hundreds of stories that had been published early on that contradicted the official story. So that got me started, and I wrote my first book about 9/11 called The New Pearl Harbor, which came out at the beginning of 2004.
Right. Yeah. So you were introduced to information, and you obviously found that information compelling and articulate in the fact of questioning the story that had been perpetrated by the news media?
That's right, and I stress that because you know, our critics who never take on the points we raise, they just call us names. You know, we're conspiracy theorists and so on. They say, well, no wonder he thinks that, he's a conspiracy theorist. You know, as if you became a conspiracy theorist and then you found evidence, whereas it works the other way around. I rejected the you know, 9/11 truth movement argument when I first heard it. Richard Gage, for example, who has started Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, which now has 800 licensed architects and engineers, signing a petition saying the official story about the World Trade Center is false, we need a new investigation. He didn't come around, he didn't know anything about this, hadn't heard anything about it till 2006, but soon as he looked at the evidence, he very quickly found it convincing too.
Yeah.
So that's what we found, that it is evidence that for most people turn them around, because most people don't want to believe their country did such a thing. You know, our critics call us, oh, you're the hate America crowd, so you want to blame America for everything. Well, no. We would like to think we live in a country that wouldn't commit treason and murder its own citizens, but the evidence finally bowled us over that that indeed is what happened.
Mm-hmm. You said over 800 people of credentialed people question it. I'm sure there's a whole lot more than that, but how is it that the generalization can be made, or is made, that anyone who questions the official story is, as you said, is made in that case? At what point isn't there going to be a saturation point where they're going to say, how can so many experts in different fields continue to believe that there was more to meets the eye than just a couple terrorists, a couple, you know, with the screws loose and running planes into buildings?
Yeah, it's, you know, thus far the mainstream media simply hasn't reported what has happened to the 9/11 truth movement over the last 3 years in particular. They still paint this picture of, oh, it's a bunch of fringe thinkers, they're wild-eyed conspiracy theorists, they bunch of kids on the internet and so on, people who know nothing about the real world. They won't tell you that now there is that organization, and all of these you can find on Google. Just Google these and you'll find these websites. Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. There's Pilots for 9/11 Truth. There is Veterans for 9/11 Truth, lots of military veterans, including lots of former military officers. Mm-hmm. Firefighters for 9/11 Truth. Those guys certainly know something about how fire deals with buildings. We have lawyers for 9/11 Truth. We have medical professionals for 9/11 Truth. Mm-hmm. Religious leaders for 9/11 Truth. Political leaders for 9/11 Truth, with former or present members of parliament of at least a dozen countries, including the European Union itself, who have signed up to political leaders for 9/11 Truth. And this is led by Yukihisa Fujita, who is a senator in the Japanese parliament. So thus far they've been able to get away with this idea that, like Charles Krauthammer recently said, that Van Jones simply wasn't fit for public service. He's not even fit for polite society because he questioned the official story.
Right.
They don't let you know that there are hundreds, even thousands of Van Jones who have gone on public record and have not withdrawn their statement, questioning the official story.
Well, Van Jones obviously removed his name from that for the political expediency of the matter, which shows you the kind of content of his character, because when truth is superseded by the political expediency, you can imagine what happens if this man gets into power. But that really wasn't the only reason that he was ejected from there. But and you mentioned the Japanese. Didn't the Japanese just elect that man you just talked about, who was a questioner of the 9/11?
Yeah, his party now is in control in Japan, mm-hmm. and the fellow who, as of now, looks like he will be the prime minister, has been supportive. When Yukihisa Fujita had a book party, for he had published a book about 9/11. I happen to know about it because it had one of my essays in it. Several of the leading members of the party showed up, and you know that wouldn't happen here,
right.
But it happened there.
Mm-hmm.
And so things are happening there. Lots of things are now happening in Italy and Norway and other countries in Europe. I did a tour of 10 European cities a few months ago, and there is a growing support for the 9/11 truth movement.
Yeah. I don't know what country it was, but didn't somebody discover nanomolecules of thermite?
That's right. And I got to know this fellow while I was on this tour. This is Niels Harrit. Mm-hmm. He is a professor of chemistry at the University of Copenhagen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is an example of one of these guys that the mainstream press would like to paint as wild-eyed nuts, you know. Here's a very sober fellow, very thoughtful, very reflective.
Yeah.
But when he saw a few years ago the collapse of World Trade Center 7, he had not even known, like a lot of people still don't know, that there were three buildings that came down that day,
right.
Not just the two that were hit by airplanes,
correct.
And had big jet fuel fires in them,
mm-hmm.
but a third building, World Trade Center 7, Building 7, 47-story building, would have been the biggest building in the state, in about half of the states in our union. So this should have not been able to be kept a secret, but they did, like the 9/11 Commission didn't even mention it. And there's for good reason. When you see the video of that, you see this building completely solid, stable, nothing, you know, fires on only a few floors, and then just all of a sudden it comes down, and it comes down at for a few seconds,
mm-hmm.
in absolute free fall. This has recently been proven.
Yep.
And NIST has even, the NIST, which is the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which was assigned the job of putting out the official report,
mm-hmm.
it delayed and delayed and delayed year after year after year, refusing to put out a report on Building 7,
yep.
finally put it out just before the Bush-Cheney administration left office.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally were forced to admit, yeah, it came down in absolute free fall for 2.25 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's completely against the principles of physics. And, in fact, in the earlier version, when they were still denying free fall, they said this is in conformity with the principles of physics.
Mm-hmm.
And in the final version, when they admitted free fall, they took out all those references, and they no longer claimed that their theory was in accord with physical principles. So they just virtually admitted, for anybody paying attention, that they couldn't account for, they were trying to account for the collapse without saying that explosives were used. The whole project was to deny that explosives had been used. And nevertheless, it came down the way it did, and they finally had to admit, well, we really can't explain why it came down. And so, in effect, they affirmed a miracle, something that
right.
Violated the basic one of the basic
sure.
principles of physics.
Yeah, that's what I said in a pre-show monologue there, that it seems that the laws of physics took the day off on 9/11/01. And it's interesting. Of course, now we're talking about World Trade Center 7, but, you know, we could obviously talk about the Twin Towers. But when it comes to the anomalies of that day, there you might get away with some crazy story about the Twin Towers, the first still structured buildings ever to collapse. But when you get to the Building 7, you can't apply those because a plane never hit that building. And so the question should be is, how is it that all the laws of physics, as you say, had been violated, and why that's not cranked down by some legitimate, I guess otherwise considered legitimate organization, other than sort of independent folks, I guess, which are dismissed as conspiracy theories, but they just cannot explain, and so therefore they don't explain, and as you say, they insert the idea that you are a nut case if you even bring that question up.
That's right. They want to divert attention from the evidence and put the attention on you. Who are you and what are your credentials? And obviously you're a nutcase if you think our own government could have done this and blah, blah, blah. But my most recent book, which in fact is just coming out now, it is now available on Amazon.com. I haven't actually got my own copy yet, but I know it's on the way. is called The Mysterious Collapse of World Trade Center 7, Why the Final Official Report About 9/11 is Unscientific and False. And I show that when the head of the NIST project, Shyam Sunder, announced on in August of last year that NIST had solved the mystery of World Trade Center 7 and that science stood behind everything they said, I show that both of those statements are absolutely false, and that, in effect, as I say, at the end of the report, they admit their faults.
Right.
And so this book, I think, if some people, you know, some people are still on the fence. They say, well, you know, I see a lot of holes in the official story, but I haven't seen any absolute proof that the official story is false. Maybe the buildings could have come down because of fire. Mm-hmm. I think if people will look at this book, they will come away. If they greet it even with a 10% open mind, they will see, okay, this is absolute proof. And I use that word very advisedly. As I say, I was a philosophy professor. Right. And one of the things we teach and write about is epistemology. And that's the study of what we know and how we know. Mm-hmm. And you have to distinguish between knowledge and mere belief. You can't say you know something unless it happens to be true, and also your belief that it is true is justified by the relevant evidence. But I would say now we know, strongly know, that the official report on World Trade Center 7 is false. It's unscientific and false. Okay. And then you can generalize. I can say that, you know, in my previous books, Debunking 9/11, Debunking the New Pearl Harbor Revisited, mm-hmm. I dealt at considerable length with the Twin Towers. And I would say that those books showed that at least it was 99% certain that the official story was false. Yeah. But this time, this is 100%.
Wow, that's quite a striking claim. All right, we have this question here from the Fast Blast for you, Dr. Griffin. It says, why when the so-called planes hit the Twin Towers, only wing imprint was in the side of the building, but there was no tail section imprint in the side of the building?
Boy, that's a question I can't speak to, so I won't try. Mm-hmm. I've spoken to that issue with regard to the Pentagon, and my answer there is, well, simply no big airplane hit the Pentagon. But I can't respond to that with regard to the towers.
Okay, if a plane didn't hit the Pentagon, what is your speculation on that?
Well, The main thing I've dealt with is simply evidence that the official story is false, because that's all we need in order to demand a new investigation. Mm-hmm. And we have presented, you know, more, mm-hmm. You know, 100 times more than sufficient evidence to require, you know, that mm-hmm. should have evoked a new investigation if anybody were interested in that. Mm-hmm. With regard to what really did happen, on a lot of these things, we just have to say, well, we don't know. We could find out rather easily if there would be a special investigation. You get a special prosecutor, say, who has subpoena power, and he can threaten people with prison time if they don't tell the truth.
Yeah.
He can give them immunity if they are lowerlings who are willing to report the doings of the people higher up, the ones you want to really get. And I would say, you know, I've told people, you give me the powers of a special prosecutor, and in a week I could pretty well tell you everything that happened on 9/11.
And speaking of the Pentagon, that has got to be one of the most lamest excuses ever of not being able to provide video. You know, the grainy off-site camera, security camera that they offer as proof. For one thing, it took 5 years for them to even release the video And, you know, of course, it was released originally and had the wrong date on it. But then they re-released it 5 years later and said, oh, here it is. We got a cleaner video of a plane hitting, which is obscene. But there were 12 cameras, I understand, on that wall facing the oncoming supposed plane. And then all of the video camera around from all the surrounding businesses was confiscated. How is it that the Pentagon could say that they didn't have the most formidable, impregnable building on the planet with no pictures of a gigantic aircraft hitting their building?
Well, actually, they did tell their employees that they were in the safest building in the world. I quote in Debunking 9/11 Debunking and the New Pearl Harbor Revisited, I quote people who worked there who reported that that's what they were told. Also, the Department of Justice has admitted that it has 85 videos from cameras that were trained on the Pentagon. And, you know, somebody sent in a FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act request, saying, like to see those. And they denied it, saying this would be national security. They said, we do have videos responsive to your request. 85 of them.
Just trust
them. So that is rather remarkable. They admitted that. Uh-huh. And then said, but you can't see them, national security. So, you know what national security means, the security of the people who are presently in office.
Right. And there you go. And that speaks to this idea that's been foisted out there, that anybody who disagrees with the current sitting president is a racist. But you know what? If they look at the people that disagree with him, many of these people just as vehemently disagree and even make worse accusations against President Bush. So it has nothing to do with color. It has to do with people in power and their shenanigans that they're pulling and the mistruths of some kind of operation that's going on here. But let's move a little bit further, Doctor. That is, let's just go with the idea that, in fact, and you point blank say, I mean, I thought I got you at 100% saying that it was, you didn't say inside job, but it was definitely a choreographed event, let's just say. But what would be the purpose? Was it to get us in the Iraq war? Or was it to build the industrial complex there for the military?
Well, I think, you know, it's a very complex operation, and you had more than one group involved. You certainly had people in Washington and in New York. So each group had to get something out of it, what they wanted. So you would have different motives in New York, which would have to do with New York and money and so on. Because I stress this because some people say, well, you know, why would Building 7 come down, and why did they have to completely destroy the buildings in order to, if the purpose was to have a new Pearl Harbor where we're attacked?
Yeah.
That would be Washington motive. But New York motive, well, you know, they wanted to get rid of those buildings for one thing. Silverstein, who had taken out a lease on all of them, besides already owning World Trade Center 7, he was ready to get over $7 billion from his insurance company.
You're talking about Larry Silverstein.
So there's motivation there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, from Washington, I think the motivations were sort of multiple, but they all related around imperialism, because Bush and Cheney were the ultimate imperialists we've ever had in power, where they wanted to make America.
But if that was the Bushes, but if Obama was in power then, do you think 9/11 would have happened?
No, I don't think so, but, you know, that's speculation. We're talking about a gang here of guys, neocons and neocon fellow travelers. Bush himself wasn't a neocon, but he's certainly a fellow traveler. But Cheney and Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and Pearl, they had been working since the early 1990s, right after President Bush #1 refused to go all the way take out Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
And they said, this was our big chance to take over Iraq, and, you know, we need the oil and all that.
Yeah.
And we didn't do it. So they've been chomping at the bit. They had been begging Clinton to attack Iraq and invade.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't do it. But as soon as they got into power, they were discussing, and the, you know, then Treasury Secretary has said the very first meeting of the National Security Council was to discuss the question how to go about attacking Iraq. The question wasn't whether we should, it was just how do we do it.
Mm-hmm.
And this document that the neocon organization called Project for the New American Century had put out,
yep,
had of course famously said, we need, you know, if this transformation of the military that Rumsfeld's talking about and other people are talking about, which means militarizing the, computerizing military and putting weapons in space and so on, which would cost trillion, you know, at least $1 trillion. That's going to come about slowly, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event such as New Pearl Harbor. So this was a gang of people who were all set to do this. So there's no reason to think that just anybody who happened to be president would have done it. For example, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, right after, you know, Cuba had been taken back for the Cubans by Fidel Castro, the Joint Chiefs of Staff came with a proposal to President Kennedy, saying, here are some pretexts we would have for invading Cuba. And these were pretexts that would involve killing American citizens. Kennedy refused to do it. This was the famous Operation Northwoods.
Mm-hmm.
But if Nixon had been in power, I have no doubt whatsoever that that would have happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me get to this question here in the live chat. If Obama wasn't involved with him, then why didn't he reverse the Patriot Act when he got in, and then H.R. 955, which died in committee?
Well, these are, you know, Daniel, these are difficult questions, and they're speculation, and I don't get involved in speculation. I just, you know, we've got enough to do just to point out why the official story is false, you know, and demand a new investigation. Now, I'm not a mind reader. I can't tell you why people don't do this and that.
So even at this, even years later, you're saying that there are still a brewing undercurrent that is demanding a fresh investigation or an objective investigation?
Oh, it's not only underground. It's stronger than ever. As I was saying, we've got all of the now professional organizations, so that whereas a few years ago they could dismiss the 9/11 truth movement as a bunch of conspiracy nuts or people who knew nothing, you can't dismiss. We're talking about major figures, former CIA agents, former military veterans, former pilots, present-day firefighters, present and past, and so on. So the movement is stronger than ever, and the evidence is stronger than ever. And I would say, case in point, my last book. I think people will say this is even stronger evidence than we had before.
Yeah.
And let me mention the nanothermite paper that Niels Harrit was the head of, we mentioned a minute ago.
Mm-hmm.
There you're talking about unexploded nanothermite in the World Trade Center dust, and lots of it. And nanothermite is a high explosive. People, you know, thermite, ordinary thermite, is just an incendiary. It starts fires. And it's been around for over 100 years. But nanothermite is a high explosive. It's qualitatively different. And yet people try to blur that distinction. And I don't know if you saw the Nat Geo, the National Geographic show the other night. It was an absolute travesty where some of us, Dylan Avery and Richard Gage and myself and Stephen Jones, had given interviews for them. They chopped them up, you know, to make us look as silly as possible. And then they disproved, in quotes, our assertions by three just absolutely ridiculous experiments that really National Geographic just has to be so embarrassed by, because any scientist watching the show would say, that is just absurd. And here was one of them. Stephen Jones had explained the difference between nanothermite and ordinary thermite. And, as I say, it's a qualitative difference. And he said, of course, ordinary thermite won't melt steel, just, you know, a bag of it. You just, but if you take it and make a shaped charge out of it, then it may. And then particularly if you add sulfur and turn it into thermite, that lowers the melting point of steel several hundred degrees. And so that would do something. Well, here's what the guy did to disprove that nanothermite could have brought the building down. He took an ordinary bag of thermite, put it right next to a steel column, and then set it on fire. And, of course, the bag of thermite burned up and didn't affect the steel at all. Well, anybody, we would have all told him, yeah, that's exactly what would happen. But he took that as proof that nanothermite wouldn't do it. And we corresponded with him. His name was Robert Erickson. And we explained, well, of course that wouldn't. But he said, well, look, I can't get nanothermite. It's not available. So I had to show the audience something. They had to have a visual proof. And all I had was ordinary thermite, so that's what I used. And so I said, okay, let's say you're from another country and you've never seen baseball. And you see a baseball park here in San Francisco, and somebody tells you, you know, there's a guy here named Barry Bonds, and he can take this little ball and just knock it out of the park. And you said, oh, that's just crazy. And other people chime in and say, oh, yes, he can. And you say, oh, these guys are just fanatics. You know, your little play on fans, fanatics. Okay. And so then you're going to prove that he can't do it. But, of course, you're not Barry Bonds. You haven't taken your steroids, for one thing, and you've never hit a ball before. And secondly, you don't have a real bat, and you don't have a real ball, but you're able to get a wiffle bat and a wiffle ball. So you get the camera on you, and you try to knock the wiffle ball out of the court.
Okay.
And then you tell the audience, okay, there's proof. It's just ridiculous, the idea that Barry Bonds could hit a baseball out of the court, out of the park.
Yeah.
That's essentially what they did with all three experiments.
Yeah. Let me ask something. Somebody mentioned the fact that maybe nanothermite is only military-grade thermite. Is that true, or can terrorists get it, or normal average people?
Well, domestic terrorists can get it. I don't think foreign terrorists are going to get it from the American
military.
And
the thing is, just to let people know about thermite, basically, doesn't it liquefy metal?
Oh, it just blows it to smithereens. It blows everything in the building to smithereens.
Okay.
All the concrete is turned into very fine dust. Mm-hmm. But sure, the steel, it'll just cut immediately. Mm-hmm. And it even blew pieces of, big sections of steel weighing thousands of tons, mm-hmm. blew it out horizontally 500-600 feet. It was plastered another building, so there's no doubt about it. We have video of it. It's enormously powerful.
Wasn't there, at the Ground Zero, didn't they say they detected liquid metal sort of traveling underneath that footprint, those buildings' footprint?
That's right. Many people, including many professionals.
And then what would be the only reason for liquefied metal to be moving at the collapsed area?
Well, and it seems to be, most of them said it was molten steel. Almost everybody identified it as molten steel. Now, Stephen Jones, who's one of our leading physicists, he argues, well, it was probably actually liquid iron, because iron is a byproduct mm-hmm. of steel when you melt it with thermite. And but whether it was liquid iron or steel, their temperature the temperature at which they melt is virtually the same.
It had to be hot.
And the people, you know, you had firefighters, you had people involved in the cleanup, you had one of the former architects of the building, designers, all testifying. They saw, they would either say pools or rivers of molten steel, and yet NIST, when it was one of its main authors named John Gross, was asked about this at the end of a public presentation, and he just said, well, I deny your premise that any qualified or credible person testified to seeing molten steel. So they just deny the evidence, and that's the first half of my book, The Mysterious Collapse of World Trade Center 7, is about NIST denial of all the evidence pointing to the fact that explosives were used. There's the physical evidence and there's the testimonial evidence, and they simply deny all of it, and this is one of the major forms of scientific fraud, omitting evidence. So NIST is guilty of three major forms of scientific fraud: falsifying evidence, fabricating evidence, and omitting evidence. And that's why I subtitled my book, Why the Final Official Story Report about 9/11 is Unscientific and False.
And I would have to say those scientists really are disappointing to me, because they're a discredit to their own category of employment. But let's just a little update here for those of you just joining us. We have on a Newsmaker line tonight Dr. David Griffin. We're talking about his new book, The Mysterious Collapse of World Trade Center 7. And that is, as I said earlier, you could point to the Twin Towers, say, okay, well, you had a fire there. Obviously, you had jet fuel exploding, and maybe, and, you know, I mean, there's so many anomalies with that. I mean, it's even unreasonable to believe they collapsed, because, as you said earlier about the free fall, I believe the free fall actually happened with the Twin Towers as well. But when you get to Building 7, there are definitely some anomalies there that cannot be explained, and the laws of physics have to be violated. Who knows, 10 ways to Sunday. And I think the overall picture, though, Dr. Griffin, and about this book and others that you've written and the speeches you've given and the heat you have taken, is that those of us out here who look at that historically, or if they basically don't show the pictures anymore, you have to go look them up. But those of us that are still looking at that and with questions, we don't need to feel that we are some kind of nutcase ourselves, or that we've been taken over by conspiracy hypnotism to make us believe there was conspiracy. There are credible facts and multiple, if not hundreds, of witnesses and scientific testimony and examinations to back up the idea that this was not as it was led, as it was, it did not happen the way we've been told it happened.
Yeah, and I'll tell you a website that you will never see cited in the mainstream press. It's called Patriots Question 9/11. And this is a website of people who have questioned the official story. Not everyone on that site says, well, I think 9/11 was an inside job. I would say maybe 80% of them do. But they've questioned the official report and said we need a new examination. You will see that it's various classifications. So you've got actors and entertainers. You have journalists. You have various professionals with the relevant expertise: architects and engineers, firefighters, pilots, and so on. And you go on there, you will see there are thousands of people who are either well-known or well-credentialed who have questioned the official story, and I would say about 80% of them, roughly, say, go all the way and say it was an inside job of some sort. And so, if you're one of those people who feels like, oh, gee, I don't dare say this because that makes me an oddball, well, go on there and see. You've got a lot of company of a lot of very credible people, a lot of whom, say, have PhDs in engineering and physics and aeronautics and so on.
So questioners of government and its ambitions really are in good company. Hey, we got this question here, and I'm trying to discern the question if it is that perhaps we were talking about the nanothermites, and you mentioned the people that did examination and found it. Did they go and get debris from Ground Zero? Where did they get their source? And how do we know they didn't add to it just to make us believe that it was already there?
Well, Stephen Jones, who for one thing is a good Mormon, and, you know, a good physicist, who takes a lot of pride in his work as a physicist. Okay. People like this don't cheat.
Okay.
He made a plea in a publication for anybody who had found World Trade Center dust and had saved some, to send it to him, and particularly if they had gathered it early on so that there was no chance that it got contaminated by the cleanup.
Right.
Operation. Mm-hmm. He got four different sets of it from four different people, four different locations. And there were also some people who sent it to European scientists. Niels Herit reports this.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a number of scientists who were involved in this, and a number of people who sent it and sent a little affidavit along saying, you know, here's where I found it. One person had collected it just immediately after the second tower. I mean, within 20 minutes after the second tower had collapsed. Some people got it from their apartment nearby that
really?
Either had an open window or the blast broke the window open. And dust came in, and so when they were able to come back to their apartment a week or two later, here was this dust, and so obviously it would not have been contaminated by the cleanup, and so on. Mm-hmm. And so, for various reasons, and you can read about this in the paper. This paper, I cite it, and I discuss it at considerable length in this book on the mysterious collapse of World Trade Center 7. And give
World
a summary of the report that I think most people say is pretty intelligible for lay people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and somebody asked the question. You just brushed over the fact that he was a Mormon. I mean, is that a credibility issue? If somebody's a Mormon, they certainly don't tell lies or something. Or,
well, I say he's a very, very religious people, and
okay.
I've known a lot of Mormons in my life. I'm not a I don't believe the Mormon theology, but I have been very impressed by Mormon people, ones who are devout Mormons.
Okay.
And they take their religion very seriously.
Okay.
And this includes thou shalt not lie.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, didn't his university try to get him kicked off the faculty?
Well, he essentially was kicked off. He he was put on academic leave, and then the school, as quite often they do to involve a big fight, they bought him out and gave him a very good retirement package, which he took, partly because he could see he wasn't going to be allowed back in the classroom.
Oh.
And he wasn't going to be able to publish under the name of the university.
Mm-hmm.
And furthermore, he was going to have all of his time freed up to work on investigating 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And it was out of that enormous amount of free time that he had, thanks to his retirement, that this paper on nanothermite appeared, because he gathered other scientists together, including Niels Herit. And they were able to work on this over a very long period. I had thought, by the way, that I was going to... They sent me an advance copy clear back in, I believe, October of 2008. And I thought I was going to finish up my book, say, by December. But that the refinement of that paper just went on and on and on. And then getting it published went on and on. And so I was rather late getting my book out. I was waiting to be able to write about the final version of that paper.
Yeah.
So it was a very meticulously scrutinized paper with all seven authors having to sign off on it at the end.
Yeah, there are a lot of 9/11 truthers that reads like a who's who's list of credibility, and the abbreviations behind in front of their name too as well. And a lot of these folks put their reputations on the line for truth, and don't you wish that our elected officials would put their livelihood up against the truth there? But evidently they trade that in for the moment to stay in power. But the larger question, though, and we're going with the idea and the truth that this was an inside job, that there was thermite, there was a free fall, there's enough scientific evidence and empirical evidence there to show in any court of law, an unbiased group of jurors would say this wasn't only a fire that brought the building down. There was something else involved. The larger picture is then that we can know for a fact that our government in plain sight would lie to us. And you could go right up into healthcare where somebody will look you in the eye and say, we're going to add 40 to 50 million new people to healthcare, a government run healthcare role, and we won't add a dime to the deficit. These kind of bold-faced lies like that, people believe, like the majority of people believe that 9/11 happened just the way it's demonstrated. And, you know, the reason they don't replay 9/11 events is because they feel like, you know, it's too hard for the children to view. But really what they're saying is the more they play it, the more questions it will engender. Somebody, you know, more and more people say, well, wait a minute, how did Building 7 collapse now? I saw a little fire there, so how did the building collapse, you know? Or if they ever play that Larry Silverstein tape that clearly where he says they decided to pull it. So to me, that is the admission of guilt that building was pulled. By the way, Dr. Griffin, some people speculate that the Building 7 was an epicenter, the building where they were supervising the 9/11 event. Do you have anything on that?
There are various theories about why Building 7 came down, and any of them might be true. But again, my focus is on the fact that it came down a different way than the official story said. And we can find out why it came down. Or, you know, there may have been a mixture of motives, several motives for bringing it down. But that question can wait. I don't need to know right now exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm. Focusing
too much on the question of what really happened can actually be self-defeating, because it gives the enemies something to attack. They can say, oh, well, this theory, here's your theory, and blah, 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 that's not credible. Taking the attention away from the main point we want to make, which is simply the empirical evidence, the physical evidence, the scientific evidence that the official story is false. So I keep focus there.
Dr. Griffin, has the other side ever presented scientific evidence that it did happen the way they said?
Well, I say that World Trade Center 7. The first half of my book deals with their denial that there were explosions. The second half of the book deals with their own theory. So yes, if you ask NIST, they would say, oh yes, we've presented a scientifically sound analysis of how the building came down.
Right.
But then I show in the second half of my book that to do this, first of all, they had to fabricate an enormous amount of evidence. For example, claiming that there was a raging fire on the 12th floor, which they take to be the crucial floor, at 5 o'clock, whereas their own report that they put out back in 2004 shows that the fires on floor 12 had burned out by 4:45 and virtually burned out by 4 o'clock. So they just fabricate that enormous fire at 5 o'clock, 21 minutes before the building comes down. Likewise, they claim, well, partly the building came down because the girders that were giving support to the towers didn't have shear studs connecting them to the floor slabs, and so they gave way. Well, you look back in that 2004 report and you find they said the girders as well as the floor, beams were attached to the floor. So they just tell all of these lies. And so, no, they have not given a scientific explanation, because it's not science if you have to fabricate the data.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I was saying, and it's a little bit of extrapolation going on to the fact that if this event is so obviously a fraud perpetrated on the world, then have you within your mind questioned any other event or events that are in the news? Or should we be questioning on the order of the 9/11 truthers and their question of that event? Should we apply that to, say, the election of Obama? I mean, should there any event?
And I'll say it again. I focus on 9/11, and that's what I'm here to talk about. Yeah. That's what I write about. That's what I have expertise about. So that's what I talk about, and that's all I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You said that the Larry Silverstein had perhaps an interest in by the billions of dollars of insurance. Did he get paid?
He got over $7 billion, yes. I'd say he got a good
And how much
salary.
Did he invest in those buildings?
Pardon?
How much
He had put very little into them. He had made a very small down payment. He had paid very little for his insurance, but he insisted that they be insured against terrorist attacks, and then he said that he was to get $3.5 billion per terrorist attack. And since two planes came, he argued, well, there were two terrorist attacks, so he got $7 billion plus another $500 million for building 7.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And by the way, speaking of him and your allusion to his Pullet statement, I wrote a whole book, one of my books, in some ways my favorite book, in some ways. It's called 9/11 Contradictions, and an open letter to Congress and the press, mm-hmm. not that any of them responded, in which I'd simply lay out 25 contradictions, internal contradictions in the official story. Like Norm Mineta says, Cheney was down in the bunker by 20 after 9, the 9/11 Commission, and Cheney said, no, he didn't get down there till 10 o'clock, mm-hmm. long after the Pentagon was struck, so he could not have given a stand-down order, and so on. There's no theory in that book. It's simply facts. This person said this person said that. And so I show that there were so many internal contradictions in the story, and you know how the police go. If somebody's a criminal suspect, and he says contradictory things, keeps changing his story, right. You figure he's covering up something. They should have done that here. They had so many contradictions, you know, changing the names of the alleged hijackers on the planes.
Right.
So I go through 25 cases where either they had to change the story or they've got internal contradictions among people who support the official story.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the mainstream press had been doing even one-tenth of a job of what it should be doing, the story would have been exposed within a week because it was so sloppily done. Well, here's another example. Silverstein had made that statement saying, well, I was talking to the fire commander, and I said to him, well, you know, there's been such a loss of life. Let's not let it happen again. So we made the decision to pull it.
Right.
And so then he says, and we watched, and Building 7 came down.
Mm-hmm.
So he then he had to be helped out by his own people, Silverstein Associates. So they put out a statement saying, well, you know, what he meant by pull it was not pull the building, but to pull the contingent of firefighters that was in the building. Well, then later, when Silverstein was being challenged by We Are Change group, he said, oh, this conversation with the fire commander, that happened about 2:30 in the afternoon. Well, everybody knows, and even NIST reported, that all the firefighters had been pulled out of the building by 1 o'clock at the latest. And so Silverstein undermined the rationale that his own people had provided. So this is how unbright these people are. They made so many mistakes, and yet they're going free because the press won't do its job.
Mm-hmm. Well, fortunately, we have people such as yourself out there that is trying to get the truth out there. And Let's get to some more questions on this building. Has there ever been a steel-structured building that has collapsed due to fire?
There had never, prior to 9/11, been a steel-framed high-rise building that had collapsed for any reason other than what we call controlled demolition, which means placing explosives to remove the steel columns in the tower. Okay. That's the only way it's ever been done, and physicists and engineers will tell you that's the only way it could be done.
Okay. And so then would we be able to say clearly then that the evidence shows that all three buildings had explosives planted prior to their collapses?
Absolutely.
When was the opportunity?
Just a little clearer in the case of World Trade Center 7, because as you said earlier, with the planes coming in and hitting the buildings, people say, oh, that destabilized them, and then the fires, you know, people think jet fuel is some sort of miracle thing. Well, it's just kerosene, you know, it's a hydrocarbon fire. So the virus couldn't have gotten above 1800, and yet we had mainstream television shows, both in England and America, coming on and saying the buildings came down because the fires melted the steel. The fires couldn't have gotten the steel anywhere close, within 1,000 degrees of getting hot enough to melt, and yet that stuff got implanted in the public's mind. So they said, "Oh well, no problem."
Okay, so that was that. Then there's also the evidence, of course, of the free fall speeds of all three buildings. I'm just wondering why those, well, I guess you said earlier that there may have been a design to remove those buildings to begin with, because is any building as tall or near as tall as the Trade Centers ever had their fire put out? It seems to me, I did a search on that and found that most of the time, if they're on fire, they just let them burn out. Is it possible to put fires out?
Well, no. They work at getting them out, and you've had fires much bigger, much hotter, and much more long lasting than the fires in the World Trade Center buildings. For example, particularly the South Tower, and that's the tower that collapsed first, even though it had been hit second. It had been on fire only for 56 minutes, and yet it comes down. But you've had fires, huge fires in buildings in Los Angeles and Philadelphia in particular, that were really huge and lasted 14 or 18 hours. And no, they didn't collapse. They didn't begin to collapse. They didn't lose any of their steel. They were gutted. They were burned out, but the steel stood there. And right after the NIST report on World Trade Center came out, and I have an appendix on this at the end of the book, you had this huge building fire in Beijing. And it burned anywhere from 10 to 16 hours, or different estimates, but it burned all night. And again, not a single bit of the steel even bent, let alone collapsed.
Yeah.
And so I said, you know, one might be forgiven to believe that the gods had arranged that fire just to emphasize how absurd the official report about World Trade Center 7 is, which had small fires only on a few floors. It had what they call sustained fires only on 6 floors. And I looked at the evidence, and we have evidence for one of those floors. The sustained fire lasted all of 40 minutes. And so the idea that this building could have been brought down by fire where all those other buildings weren't is absurd.
And they're going to, years later, I noticed that they still don't have any buildings there at Ground Zero. What's going on? Do you know anything about that? Is there some sort of inner agency squabble, or they got to get permission from the Chinese government?
There have been a lot of stories about this, but I haven't really gotten involved with that. It's
bureaucracy at its finest.
Agency and wrangling, and probably has to do a lot with money and so on. But I say that's not a part of the story that I focused on.
Would you be Would you be willing to, or have you already signed a petition to the current president to demand a new investigation?
Well, I have helped set up several of the organizations. I was involved in setting up religious leaders for 9/11 Truth and political leaders for 9/11 Truth and medical professionals for 9/11 Truth. And all of these have petitions that end by calling on President Obama to authorize a new, truly independent investigation. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, and I'm a member of one of those, the religious leaders for 9/11 Truth. So, yes, mm-hmm. I have actually signed a petition.
Mm-hmm. And what religion are you affiliated with?
Well, I'm a Christian theologian, and I grew up in the Disciples of Christ Christian churches. Mm-hmm. So that's my background. I'm a fairly, you know, and as I say, most of my writing prior to getting involved with 9/11 was in philosophy, religion, and theology. So if people are interested to know that side and, you know, what kind of person would be, you know, what kind. Some people have said, well, now I'm interested in your philosophy, religion, and your theology because I'm interested to know maybe, you know, what kind of person with what kind of religious beliefs would then be motivated to do this kind of thing. So people can go on Amazon.com and see my books if they're interested in that side of my my life and
how many
professional
books
life.
How many books have you written on the 9/11 subject there, Doctor?
It depends on how you count. If you say strictly about 9/11, arguing that the official story is false, I have eight. This mysterious collapse of the World Trade Center 7 is the eighth. But some people think of my little book on Osama bin Laden, Dead or Alive, as a 9/11 book. So in that sense, you could say nine. And let me say something about that little book, because it illustrates the power of the mainstream press. Their ability to prevent people from getting information that they might be interested in. I cannot get a book review. I've never had a mainstream newspaper or magazine or television show or anything have a review of any of my books, even though my previous 9/11 book was called The New Pearl Harbor Revisited, where I brought my first book up to date to 2008. And it was named Publishers Weekly Pick of the Week in the third week of November 2008. Now, this is an honor that is bestowed on only 51 books a year. So here you have Publishers Weekly, which is kind of the Bible for book buyers, you know, librarians and bookstore owners. It tells them which of all the mass of books published that week, which ones are really worth getting. And they star certain ones, and then they pick, they select one as the pick of the week, and they selected mine. That is quite an honor, particularly when you look back and see some of the reviews that Publishers Weekly gave me in my first two books, where they say, oh, this is just more conspiracy stuff. So they've come around, and nevertheless, I never got a review. Nobody called after that to say, well, we'd like to interview you about this. But this last week, a British newspaper, in fact, it's the most widely circulated paper in the UK, it's called the Daily Mail, and a reporter there named Sue Reed wrote a review of my little Osama bin Laden book, which had just come out in the British edition. Well, that changed the ranking on Amazon from somewhere around 100,000, meaning that there were 100,000 books selling better than mine, brought it clear down to almost 700, meaning that there were only a little more than 700 books selling mine. That's what the mainstream press can do. They let people know, and then people can say, hey, there's a topic that interests me. And so people get informed, whereas the American press have systematically refused to review any of my books or any of the other main books that have come out about 9/11.
Yeah. You know, I noticed when I was doing some pre-show research, there are 9/11 videos on YouTube. Some have upwards of 5 million views. And if you add all the other videos up, there's got to be tens of millions of views. Wouldn't you think that would tell the mainstream media there is an audience that is hungering and thirsting for this type of information? And perhaps if they produced a show that was a little bit more objective, they could have a huge watching audience of that program.
Well, the mainstream media knows that. But contrary to popular opinion, the major purpose of the mainstream media is not to maximize their audience. For example, when Charlie Sheen first came out about 9/11, what was that, a year ago or so?
Yeah.
They had a program on it on Showbiz Tonight. Well, they got the highest, their ratings went through the roof. So you would think, oh, well, they'll do another show on that. No. Evidently, the word came down from above, no more Charlie Sheen, no more 9/11 shows. So there is a higher value than audience ratings. Mm-hmm. And this is called protecting the official myth about the goodness of America. You know, we believe that, you know, if you're a good American, you have to believe America's the greatest nation on the face of the earth. We are the exceptional nation where other nations rob and lie and invade other countries under false pretexts, and they steal elections and so on. We don't do that here. And so the mainstream media, its job is to keep that myth going. That's its major function. A secondary thing is within the parameters allowed by that, then they fight for ratings. But nobody can cheat by going outside and publishing forbidden stories.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting because it seems that at the same time the major networks viewership is going down, Fox Network seems to be going the opposite direction, and it's simply because they seem to be reporting more of the stories or more truthful in their reporting of stories than the main. I don't say that everything they do is truthful or whatnot, but certainly there seems to be a market for truth out there, and I would think your book certainly would fit into that market for truth. And, you know, people need to arm themselves with information because, you know...
Dan, I do have to step in there. I just can't let that go. The Association of Fox News with Truth, they've done polls and they've shown Fox viewers believe overwhelmingly more than viewers of the other networks that Saddam Hussein, Iraq, had weapons of mass destruction, because you got that talked about hour after hour after hour on Fox News. You also find Fox News people are a much higher percentage of them are birthers. And so on. So, Fox News appeals to a certain part of the people. So if their audience ratings are going up, is going up because they're appealing to a certain contingent of the country that likes that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And, frankly, is rather gullible. But their ratings are not going up because they're giving us a lot of truth.
Mm-hmm.
I just must take issue on that point.
Okay, no problem. You're allowed to do that.
Thank you.
Well, obviously, we're in a search for truth, and nobody has it all. Does your religion come into view of your as you look at this? Is there anything apocalyptic about this point in time of 9/11 and moving into the war with Iraq, the two wars that we've had already, and who knows what's going to happen in Afghanistan? And then you have North Korea problem over there, and Iran, getting ready for some nukes. Is there any sort of end time? Did this trigger any sort of end time events, or is this just a random act of terrorism that perhaps caused by or aided and abetted by forces within our own government? Is there something larger going on here?
I do not hold this kind of apocalyptic version of Christianity. I do fear that we might be close to bringing an end to the world in the sense of bringing an end to human civilization, or at least a great diminishment of it. But if that's happened, from my point of view, that will be because of human sin and ignorance, not because of divine will and divine causation.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that there was a floor within the Building 7 there that was a self-contained terrorist operation by the city of New York to begin with. It had its own air supply and things. Do you know anything about that?
Well, sure. That's the famous Floor 23, as Giuliani's Office of Emergency Management. And yes, it was completely insulated so that they would have been completely protected from the dust, from the towers. So there was no need to leave. And they had their own air conditioning system and so on. Nevertheless, when two city officials, and I tell this story, in fact, this is the longest story in my book, about two city officials. One was Michael Hess. He was a good friend of Giuliani's and, in fact, his corporate counsel, his lead attorney for the city of New York. And also Barry Jennings, who worked with emergency services in the housing department. And they both went up there because they were supposed to, whenever there was an emergency, go up there and meet with Giuliani. But they got up there right after the North Tower was hit. That happened at 8:46. So they got up there about 9 o'clock, and everybody was already gone. They had obviously skedaddled. There were half-eaten sandwiches and steaming coffee cups, Jennings reports. This was on an interview for Dylan Avery for Loose Change Final yep. Cut, but right. Barry Jennings begged him not to put it in. Mm-hmm. But now it's in the newer version of the post-final cut called Loose Change 9/11 American Coup, and you can see some of it in there, and you can see it on the Internet. And anyway, Jennings reported then that he called to ask what they should do, and he was told, you should get out of the building immediately. So they tried to go down the elevator, but it wouldn't work anymore, and so they started running down the stairs. And when they got to the sixth floor, there was this huge explosion. Now, remember, this would be about between 9:15 and 9:30 in the morning. Huge explosion in Building 7. And it knocked the landing out from under them and blocked their path, and they had to scramble back up to the eighth floor, break a window, call for help. Finally got help after an hour and a half or so, because the firefighters would come and then had to run away because the south tower came down. Then they came back and had to run away again because the north tower came down, and so on. And so this is very embarrassing to the official story, because the official story is there were no explosions in the building, and here you have these two well-respected city officials giving this testimony. They both gave person on the street interviews before, you know, anybody could tell them, keep your mouth shut. And these got on the tube. Mm-hmm. And so on the Internet. And so NIST just lies in their report. And they say, in fact, Giuliani had written a book in 2002, and he lied, telling about his friend Michael Hess, and he said, well, this big event was really just the North Tower collapsing. Well, that was 10:28, about an hour, more than an hour after the event they were talking about. Mm-hmm. And then when NIST wrote its report, it just continued the lie. And then the BBC did a show in which they reinforced the lie. And then just shortly before NIST report came out, in fact, 2 days before NIST announced its final report, the draft version of it, Barry Jennings shows up dead, this 53-year-old man.
Wow. All right. Hey,
yeah.
Wow. Wow, that's something right there. Hey, let me ask you, with this question here from our Fast Blast. Do you have any knowledge regarding gold found in the basement of Building 3?
Building 7, you mean? The third building that collapsed?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't. And, you know, when Loose Change first came out, that was what it was about, all that gold that they were jokingly calling Loose Change. But in Loose Change Final Cut and this fourth version, there's nothing about the gold. So I think they became convinced that that story, at least didn't, there wasn't enough evidence to support it.
Yeah, I think we had Dylan Avery on this program when the original Loose Change came out. I know there's been a couple upgrades, I suppose, that. How's he doing? Have you talked to him recently?
Well, I saw him the other night. We were both in Oakland on September 9 and 10. Mm-hmm. It was the Oakland 9/11 Film Festival. And so that's when Dylan gave the world premiere of Loose Change 9/11, the an American coup.
Yeah.
And that's where I gave my lecture. Mm-hmm. My first lecture on my new book, The Mysterious Collapse of World Trade Center 7.
Yeah.
So he's doing fine.
Okay.
He's doing fine, and audiences are still finding the Loose Change films very helpful. I would say this new version is about maybe 50% new. So if you've seen the other ones, definitely worth seeing the new one.
Yeah. And I know that even now there are still videos coming from that event. All the videos that were taken, they just seem like they keep coming, you know, from all over. So for those who would say, you know, it's been 8 years and this is old news, what would you say to them about 9/11 as relating to the time that this event has occurred and has passed?
Well, there is so much new stuff. I'd say I had to write New Pearl Harbor Revisited just to bring the story up to date of all the things that had happened from 2004 to 2008. And so the new book is longer than the first book, than the New Pearl Harbor itself. So that's how much new stuff had occurred. Mm-hmm. And likewise, there are all these new organizations, professional organizations. And to give an example of a new video that somebody might look to, just as people will go in and Google Niels Harrit's name, that's N-I-E-L-S Harrit, H-A-R-R-I-T, and just look for Niels Harrit, Danish TV, and you will see this interview, and you will see he is an extremely credible person, very straightforward, no nonsense, and talks about their discovery of the nanothermite and the significance of that. And, for example, when his interviewer said, well, you found the nanothermite in the dust, but how do you know it was used to bring down the buildings? And Niels Harrit just says, well, it's a high explosive. What else would it be doing there? You know? So he's not one who beats around the bush. You'll find him very straightforward, very credible.
Okay. For those of you just joining us, we have on our newsmaker line tonight Dr. David Ray Griffin talking about World Trade Center, the mysterious collapse of said building. Doctor, in your book, 9/11, The New Pearl Harbor, Disturbing Questions, if we were to apply just the basic tenets of the 9/11 truth movement to Pearl Harbor, would we conclude that Pearl Harbor may have been an inside job as well?
Well, that is a connection I will make now that I didn't make in the book. Mm-hmm. I knew about it then, but my publisher talked me into taking out that chapter that I had written on the original Pearl Harbor to show that there was precedent that just as the original Pearl Harbor was used to get us into World War II, you know, at least 80% of the country was against getting into the war,
right,
even though the Nazis and the Japanese, that axis of evil, was really taking over a good part of the globe. The Americans didn't want to get in the war. Roosevelt desperately wanted to get in the war, but he couldn't do it with numbers like that. But when Pearl Harbor happened, that just switched overnight. Virtually everybody was in favor of getting in the war because we had been subjected to a surprise attack. Well, it was not a surprise. We knew the Japanese were going to attack. We even knew almost down to the minute, I mean down to the second, when they were going to attack. That story has been told now. My chapter was largely a review of the book by Robert Stinnett called Day of Deceit. The new film by Dylan Avery, the new version of Loose Change, includes that as one of the sort of false flag operations that was a precedent to 9/11. So, and one good thing about thinking of it that way, it takes it out of being a Republican-Democrat thing that, you know, that it's Democrats who are accusing the Republicans of 9/11. Stinnett was a conservative Republican accusing the liberal Democrat, Roosevelt, of you know, being deceptive about Pearl Harbor. So what we have to understand is that this is a non-denominational enterprise of governments tricking and sometimes causing or allowing their own citizens to be killed in order to have a pretext for war. I say the Joint Chiefs of Staff were going to do this also in, as a pretext to take Cuba back, and it was only John Kennedy who stopped that. So some presidents will allow it, other presidents will stop it. But it's very important if we're going to have a democracy that we know that this sort of thing has happened and find some way to prevent it, because you can't have a democracy based on the will of the people if the people are systematically deceived by their own government.
Right. Question from the live chat, Doctor. How would you think large quantities of nanothermite would be applied inside the building?
Well, you know, that's a technical question that I wouldn't be able to speak to, but I did mention in my chapter that Kevin Ryan and others who had written about this pointed out that in the literature it was pointed out that there is a way to get a what's called a sol gel, S-O-L-G-E-L, which can be sprayed on. And so it can be sprayed on the steel. Now, whether that's the way it was done in this case, I would have no idea. But what I'm saying is that there are various ways to do it. Also, a lot of ideas that people have about the old kind of explosives are wrong, because the technology has really moved along. So, you know, some the people who say, oh, it couldn't have been controlled demolition because we didn't find any wires and fuses and all that, you know, that you would have if there were dynamite or RDX in there. Well, no, with the new stuff, you don't need it, and it can be triggered. Say with a cell phone, there are various ways. So those telltale signs of the traditional sort don't need to be there. But for chemists and physicists, there were still plenty of telltale signs in the dust. And by the way, not just the nanothermite, even before that paper was published, there were many studies showing there were different kinds of metals, particles in the dust that shouldn't have been there if the official story have been true. And people who are suspicious of 9/11 truther science can be aware that I report in there. There was an R.J. Lee group, which is just a standard group that has scientific group has nothing to do with 9/11. Would be appalled to be associated with it. And even the U.S. Geological Survey, a government agency, they put out reports that showed that iron had melted and then formed into little particles, meaning it had to have melted. And even a metal called molybdenum, which has a melting point of over 4,000 degrees Fahrenheit, was discovered in the dust. So it's not just nanothermite. That was just kind of the final bit of evidence, but there was plenty of evidence before then that explosives of some sort had been used.
Now, that obviously would take months, if not years, of planning. and I can understand why the date was picked. 9/11 is basically ingrained in the American psyche as emergency, and you got to do and respond, you know, to an emergency. But somebody pointed out there may have been the opportunity. We talked about the motive possibly of the, you know, the military industrial complex getting another job in Iraq, to the financial interests of Larry Silverstein, to the neocons in the Bush, government. But the opportunity, though, I think was presented as being there when, somebody said that, they closed the trade centers down for a couple of weeks and possibly had sprayed foam, fire retardant foam, on the inner structure. Could the nanothermite been applied at that time?
Sure, there are various possibilities. You know, it can be people don't work all night, and there I report in there something that Jim Hoffman had reported about another building that they realized they had to retrofit because it wasn't safe. And they didn't tell the workers that the building wasn't safe structurally. They just went in on evenings and weekends and did all the work, and the workers never knew it until years later this was reported. So there would be plenty of time to do whatever had to be done in this particular case to get the buildings set up to come down.
So the opportunity may have existed. What other evidence is there that you've discovered that indicates the Building 7 was an inside job?
Well, I say there's the two kinds of evidence. There's the physical evidence, the molten steel or molten iron, whatever it was, plus all the different kinds of particles in the dust.
Right.
Then another kind that I haven't mentioned yet, but I discuss in the book, are particles in the air. And there were, again, just regular, very well-respected scientists who have nothing to do with 9/11, who went and monitored the air there, and nevertheless reported and said, there are particles in the air here that should not be here. Mm-hmm. And they didn't take it any further in their public statements. They just said these particles shouldn't be here.
Right.
Also, another sign was these underground fires in the rubble that just went on for months. Where the fire, the ground at Ground Zero was so hot, it would still,
right.
It would continue to melt people's boots.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And everybody who reported there talked about how hellish the situation was for weeks on end. And they put in enormous amounts of water and fire retardant, mm-hmm. and it didn't make any difference. The fires just kept going. Well, Kevin Ryan, a chemist, and co-authors, in this case James Gurley, a chemical engineer, and Stephen Jones, a physicist, reported that this could be accounted for by some sort of nano technology. Because they supply their own oxygen and energy. So fire, water will not put them out because they don't need to be exposed to the oxygen in the air. They've got their own oxidizer. So the fire can just keep burning. So that's another kind of evidence. And then they report the different kinds of particles in the air. And there's a high correlation between the ingredients of nanothermite, and there are various kinds of nanothermite. That's more of a class name. Different kinds of, so there are nanothermites, but they're made of different things, like some of them are used barium and others use iron and so on. And there would be periodic emissions of these things. And so you get a very strong cumulative argument of various kinds of phenomena, otherwise unexplainable, that all can be explained by nanothermite or perhaps another kind of nanotechnology.
Mm-hmm. Was there evidence that people were being told to stay in the buildings on the PA system?
The North Tower, definitely so. The people started to leave when the South Tower came down. That'd be the natural thing to do. They were told to go back, and some of them did, and some of those people mm-hmm. did perish because of that announcement.
But yeah. I would say then, if one were to get an announcement like that today, they ought to learn from history that it may not be in their best interest.
Yeah, one would hope the learning experience had gone on. One would hope that this sort of thing will never occur again. And one reason we in the 9/11 movement worked so hard to expose this is so that it would make it harder to pull off again.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know this isn't your forte, and you've been saying particularly with the World Trade Center 7 collapse, but is there anomalies on this order on the Shanksville plane crash?
Oh, yes. The main one being there was no sign that there was a plane there.
That's got to be one of the most controversial statements. You said earlier that you doubt whether or not there was a plane in the Pentagon, and now you just said about the Shanksville, Pennsylvania plane crash. But so that you know that's got to go in the deep dark conspiracy talk there to say there wasn't even a plane there. But you are evidently so convinced, Doctor, that you say that and say it with some veracity.
Well, what I said was there was no evidence of a plane there of the nature that they described. The official story says this plane was coming down. You know, the theory is that it had been taken over by hijackers, and then the heroic passengers counterattacked and tried to wrest control of the plane back. And the first version was that the passengers got a hold of the steering wheel and brought the plane down to prevent it from going into Washington or somewhere.
Yep.
And the new version, now the official version, is no, the hijackers aimed it down mm-hmm. and that it went down and crashed into this. And then the explanation for... Now, there is debris around, but the debris is scattered for miles around, about 8 miles. You got a long debris right. field. So it pointed to a shoot down where a missile perhaps put a hole in the plane and stuff started falling out. Right. In fact, you had witnesses on the ground saying they saw debris coming out of the plane and landing on the lake there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, again, a confluence of evidence that suggests something like that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you had CNN on that day reporting at the so-called crash site and saying, you know, there's no sign of a plane here. Mm-hmm. But then saying, well, you know, there's another debris field cordoned off about 6 miles from here. So that's kind of strange.
Yep.
Secondly, the people on the ground contradict each other. And when you take the different stories, it looked like there were two planes flying that way in that area, but in different directions. Because one will say, well, no, it was going this way. Another will say, no, it's going this way. So what we can say about Shanksville is it's, you know, the visual story is false. Something else was going on other than what they're telling us. But let me say one more thing then about the alleged crash site.
Right.
That people will come there, and you can read this all over, that many people came there and just said, well, where's the plane? You'd think you'd see something.
Sure.
You know, if you walked several feet away, you know, you could see this or that or that. But right at the site, there was nothing except a passport that was supposed to be Ziad Girard, the so-called pilot,
mm-hmm.
of the plane.
Okay.
And then a red bandana. You know, some of the alleged phone calls from the planes reported that the hijackers were wearing red bandanas. Now, here's the official story. This was told in a book by a New York Times reporter. So that comes as close to the official story as you can get. And he says the plane was coming down at a steep angle at 570 miles an hour. And then it hit the soft Pennsylvania soil and buried itself underground so deeply that you couldn't even see the tail section sticking up.
It, wow.
The whole plane went underground.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And nevertheless, the passport and the bandana are found out on the ground there. So if you find that unbelievable, I'll have to say, well, here's one case where I believe it, because quite often when I'm flying a plane at 570 miles an hour, I leave the window open and things fly out. So that's probably what happened there.
Wow. Question for you.
When people tell you, you know, you're just nuts if you don't believe the official story, if you question the belief, you know, if you could turn around to them and say, okay, now tell me, do you really seriously believe that? And do you seriously believe that one of the hijackers' passports was found under the World Trade Center, so that the passport flew out of the guy's pocket when the plane hit the building, got out of the cockpit, even though there was this enormous fireball, got out of the building and fell to the ground unsinged. Do you buy that? I think you would get a lot of people that say, well, maybe I don't buy that part of it.
Yeah.
But then you start adding them up, and I can tell you 30 absurd things like that. Some of them being, like with the Twin Towers and the World Trade Center 7, that are absolute violations of basic laws of physics. So no sensible, intelligible person can really believe the official story, and yet people pretend to, mm-hmm. partly because they don't know what it is. They just say, well, whatever the official story is, I believe it.
Yeah. We have this comment that, and I've heard this too as well, that if reported on the BBC and others, venues, that Building 7 had collapsed before it was collapsed. Have you got anything on that?
Yeah, I mentioned that in my book. People have focused on the BBC and this reporter, Jane Stanley, who announced it a few minutes ahead of time. But actually, CNN had announced it much earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no doubt about that happened. We have video of it.
Mm-hmm.
The only question is, what is the explanation? So one explanation would be, well, the news media had been told the building was going to come down at a certain time, and it didn't come down
right.
When it was supposed to,
right.
And so they screwed up by yeah. announcing that it had come down.
Well, it was a
confusing another
day.
Interpretation, and I've volunteered this on behalf of the networks. There were reports going around from about noon, and certainly from 1 o'clock, but somewhere in there, the reports started circulating that Building 7 was going to come down.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I report in the book some people who mentioned this in different times that they heard it was going to come down. Mm-hmm. I can also tell you where the report came from. You trace those reports back. They came from Giuliani's people. The people in emergency management center.
Yeah, sure.
And also, while I'm on Giuliani, he reported that he knew the Twin Towers were going to come down before
wow.
they did. And so you get some idea that he was involved there.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, many of us, when we were kids, played a game where you'd have a circle and you would whisper something in the person's
right.
ear next to you, and then it would go around the circle, and then it was funny to see what the statement was by the time it got clear around the circle, went through, say, 20, 30 people.
Right.
So there's a lot of distortion. Well, it could be that the story that Building 7 is going to come down got transmuted into Building 7 has come down, and so they reported it. So
mm-hmm.
there's no proof there that they had foreknowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But what that story does is dramatize the fact that the word had gone out many hours before the building came down. about at least 5 hours, that it's going to come down. Well, how in the world would have anybody known it was going to come down, given the fact that fire has never brought down a building, given the fact that there were only a few fires on a few floors, given the fact that even if there had been, fire engulfing the whole building, there would have been no reason to believe that it was going to collapse. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty strong evidence that there were people who knew that explosives had been planted in the building. And the question was just, when is it going to come down? I even have an appendix in my book where I report, and here I do speculate a little bit, or I report other people's speculations, that the building was originally supposed to come down at about 10:45 that morning.
Really?
And that would make sense. That had been about an hour and half after Barry Jennings reported that huge explosion. Mm-hmm. That's about the same interval between the huge explosion that William Rodriguez and others reported in the basement of the North Tower, which happened just before the building was struck by the plane, and when the North Tower came down at 10:28, about an hour and 45 minutes in that case. So you have those advanced explosions to get rid of some of the huge columns so that they all don't have to be brought down simultaneously. And likewise, if the building had come down at 10:45, we wouldn't have these perfect videos of it, because at that time the dust from the collapse of the Twin Towers, or of the North Tower, was still encircling the building, and the photographers hadn't even come back. So we wouldn't have this video proof that Building 7 was a perfect replica of a classic controlled demolition called an implosion, where the building collapses from the bottom and folds in on itself.
Yeah. And a final question here for you from Nebraska. Do you have any knowledge of the government jamming internet communications on 9/11?
That's not an area that I've looked at. That doesn't mean it doesn't happen. I just don't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm. All right, Dr. Griffin, why don't we talk a little bit about your book or your website where people can get this book?
Okay, as we always say, you can get it at good bookstores everywhere, and if your bookstore doesn't have it, that gives you a clue, not a good bookstore. I'm joking, of course, a little bit, because the book is just now out. They did ship it very quickly to Amazon, so Amazon has it, as usual, at quite a discount. So if you go to Amazon.com and just go under books and then type in David Ray Griffin, you'll find all my books there, and you'll find this one at or near the top. And likewise, I do have a I don't have a website of my own, but a fellow runs one that's called DavidRayGriffin.com. And there you can get both my books and videos and lectures that are free.
Wow.
And so you don't necessarily have to pay money to get educated about 9/11.
Excellent. We have your website, DavidRayGriffin.com, in our background now. We've been showing your book cover, most of the program, and some various videos. David Ray Griffin, we appreciate you so much coming on the this program and talking about this. This information has to get out there. People need to know that there is evidence, scientific evidence, that this was controlled demolitions, and that there must have been an operation at hand. I appreciate you coming on the broadcast. Can we have you on again sometime?
Surely, Dan. Be glad to. Thank you for the opportunity.
You bet. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Goodbye. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Edge with Daniel Ott. To subscribe to The Edge newsletter, log on to theedgeam.com. That's theedgeam.com, where you can find out about our guests and topics discussed on the air. The Edge has been brought to you by EBN, the Edge Broadcasting Network, providing affordable live web streaming to the world. Visit EBN at ebnlive.net. That's ebnlive.net. Until next week, For The Edge Broadcast, I'm Chris Moore. See you on The Edge.